Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 6-packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You've got questions? O'Reilly Auto Parts has answers. Need a pro you can trust? We've got that too. No matter what you need, our professional parts people have the training and expertise to help you do things right. Deep automotive knowledge. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right, we're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shari, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys. So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the home buying blueprint, volume one and volume two. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
All right, guys, welcome back.
Yeah, yeah.
EYL, we have a special guest. This is always good conversations when we get to talk to people in the media space and cultural space in the business world, because that's kind of our niche.
Sure.
As far as, you know, looking at the business behind what people actually see. So everybody's familiar with Complex.
Mm-hmm.
They've built a tremendous brand in the world of culture, sports, entertainment, anything that really does with media, new age media. They definitely have led the charge for a long time. So Moksha Fitzgibbons,
that's me.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks.
Nailed it.
My mom for giving me, like, you know,
nailed it.
a Indian name, and I learned maybe a year ago that in India it's a woman's name. So, like, I've been running around, you know, my whole life, you know. At least I'm the only one, right? I've never met in business another Moksha, so
this is the first.
The thankful part of it, but I always think
it's... What does it mean?
It would be similar to, like, Elijah, like, you know, okay, sort of
Elijah,
freedom.
The, like, woman version of Elijah.
Yeah, or, you know, Emmanuel, something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Very,
well, yeah. None of these people that you name are women, though. Emmanuel, Elijah.
Correct. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't say I'm, you know, huge on Indian culture, no expert, but, you know, that's what I've been told, that it's, you know, not traditionally used as a man's name. So anyway, well, kind of makes it interesting.
Well,
we're here now,
it's the first Moksha we've had on the show.
Probably the last. Depending on how this goes.
No pressure.
Trying to be too incendiary.
So, president of Complex.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure you have a lot on your plate now. You guys are gearing up for ComplexCon.
Yeah.
That's always a good time. I think we've been to at least one. We've been to one.
Yeah, we went to
Long Beach
2 years ago. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. Who was there that time?
I feel like ASAP might have been there.
He's always there.
He's always... Oh, no. You know who it was? Kid Cudi.
Kid
Cudi performed.
A Boogie, I think.
He's also done it a couple times.
Yeah, Kid Cudi was one of the headliners.
He was the person.
The headliner?
Yeah, I think
so. I just remember the sneaker of the year, because that's important to me. I actually had it on as they announced it.
And Gary Vee
was... Yeah. But I think Usher came through, too. It was big. It was big. Nice. I mean, every time y'all do it, it's big.
It's going to be a lot, lot bigger this year. We... as you guys know, Complex was sold to BuzzFeed a few years ago. I think it didn't sort of fit within their ecosystem. And as a result, you know, I would say the business side of Complex eroded a bit, or wasn't nurtured to its best degree. Fortunately, they they did a good job keeping up the audience and growing that side of things. But one thing that I think really kind of suffered was ComplexCon. They just didn't put the investment into it. And we are putting a huge investment into it this year, really with sort of the thought that, like, we need to really, like, kind of establish to the community, to the fans, to the creators, to the brands that, like, Complex is back. It's back to its core. And, you know, that's where you see, like, this investment. Like, Travis is creative directing it. He and Playboy are doing sort of headlining nights. He's doing this whole sort of, like, micro con within it called Cactus Con. And, wow, you know, it's just like, you know, obviously a lot of complications in sort of pulling that all together. But we really think it's, like, the biggest marketing moment for the brand and sort of sets the halo effect for the brand overall. It's, you know, pretty unique when a media company can get 60, 65,000 young people to buy tickets, fly out, commute to this physical destination. You know, there's really very, in my mind, very few media brands that can do it. So it's a special relationship we have with the audience. And, you know, it just based on the sort of the historicals with BuzzFeed, it's you guys should come out. It's going to be much more impactful and meaningful than years before.
And the year we went, it was in Long Beach, but this year it's actually moving to Vegas.
Yeah.
What was the idea, thought process behind, all right, one of the things we see in events is, you have something that's established in one place and it's working there, keep it there, but you're moving it.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was based on the investment that BuzzFeed was making in it. It was, you know, it was shrinking, right? It needed an invigoration, and Vegas being, like, the entertainment capital of America, we felt like, you know, all the clubs, Live, Zouk, et cetera, everyone, the city will program around it as well. Like, they'll really embrace it. I think there's like 80 or 90,000 young people that travel to Vegas every day. You know, it's very close proximity to Southern California. And we just felt like we needed to make a big, bold statement. It's in the new convention center, which is attached to the Fontainebleau. Mm. You know, you've got Live in there and whatever, Poppy Steak and all these things that are creating energy. And we felt like, you know, just we could also excite the artist community. And I think that was, like, part of, like, you know, sort of getting Travis involved was like, hey, it's new, it's fresh, it's never been done before. That generally excites people. But it was definitely a risk. I was, you know, won't lie, I was concerned about it. I was like, you know, brands don't usually say that Vegas is a priority market, but, like, to, you know, my sort of, I guess, delight, everyone's been really supportive of it, embracing it. And if you look at, you know, we put the flyer out the other day, it's a mix of amazing artists and great brands, and we're super excited about it. I think it's going to be very impactful.
So, okay. So let's talk about Complex. Were you there at the beginning?
Yeah, I was there from my first job out of college. I worked at this magazine called The Source, which you guys obviously know.
Of course.
So, you know, I started out, like, you know, getting coffee and all, like, the administrative stuff that you would do back then. And, you know, I grew up, like, single mom. She never made very much money. So, like, I was very hungry to, like, make money. And I would see all, like, the sales guys, the ad sales guys, like, you know, they all had, like, Benzes and Rolexes. And, you know, Dave gave them, like, Source chains that Jacob the jeweler made if they hit their number. And I was like, man, you know, like, 23, 22 years old. I'm like, you know, I want that. So I begged them every day, give me accounts, give me accounts, give me accounts. So, like, maybe a year after working there, they started giving me, like, streetwear accounts. And that's how I met Mark and Seth, who owned Echo Unlimited. Echo.
Yep.
And, you know, selling them ads, essentially. And they're like, hey, we're going to, like, create this magazine, you know, but it's going to be a digital magazine. And we're going to distribute it on Sony mini discs, if you remember those.
Yeah.
On the hang tags of the apparel, like, super bad idea in hindsight, that failed quickly. And then it pivoted to physical magazine, which, you know, published for quite a long time. So I was one of the very first employees. I was the first salesperson. And I was there from 2002 through 2017. We sold it in 2016. And then I stayed through a sort of a transition period. But yeah, it was a great ride and a lot of, you know, sort of like figuring out print magazine businesses and making that work. And then we had, what was it, 2008, 2009, you had the recession, which literally, like, killed our print business. It, like, went from 20 something million in revenue down to, like, six in, like, 18 months. But fortunately, we had really started to work on digital, and digital went from like 600,000 to 12 million. And we were like, oh, we need to, you know, and also the friction with the audience, which we didn't really, because we had been sort of like print magazine people, we didn't really realize that. We're like, make a beautiful thing, put it out every month, put it on newsstands, send it to subscribers. Like, that was like the model. Where digital, the internet is so much more democratic. There's no friction. You can reach consumers like almost instantly. It may be more challenging to make that sort of like physical, like long-term impact with them, but there's so much more of an ease to scale audience. So that was super exciting to, for us. We were like, oh, wait a minute. Like, there's such a bigger audience on the internet versus a print magazine, which has all these distribution limitations. And so that was a super trying time. Like, you know, Echo's core business also had a lot of financial issues at that time. So we had to go independent and raise some capital. And then, you know, sort of the blog era happened and we were monetizing that way. And then sort of that as a consumer behavior changed, and we pivoted into digital video and social, and now the pivot into e-com experiences and, you know, sort of premium content, having them all come together to make a more durable long-term business. Because being solely ad dependent, if there's a big recession moment, you know, it's
so, yeah, let's talk about that then. So, okay, you guys have a media company, right? You produce content, you have shows, you had Joe Button, was that
Everyday Struggle?
Yeah, Everyday Struggle,
and,
yeah.
And Academics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Nadeska. Remy Ma?
Nadeska.
Nadeska, yeah. Nadeska. Nice. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Great
yeah,
human. So you guys produce content, you do shows, you have the Instagram thing, you got the sneaker situation. But all right, so the business, how does the business make money? You make money through advertisers.
Right? Yeah.
But you're saying that you don't want to be solely dependent on. So, yeah, talk about the verticals.
Yeah, so there's
how that actually makes money.
So there's three verticals currently that we're focused on. So you think about premium content, and largely there, the monetization is ads or sponsorship or integration.
What is the premium content for you guys?
It shows like 360 with Speedy Mormon, idea generation, sneaker shopping, and a whole host of other shows. Like, I would say we probably launch pilot somewhere around 20 shows a year, with the hopes that, you know, 10 to 20% will become successful and become like another 360 with Speedy. Like, I don't know if you saw the episode last week. He had Go Real.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 2 days it did 50 million views. Crazy.
50 million.
2 days.
Wow.
Across
TikTok, Reels, and YouTube, you know, mm-hmm. mainly in the shorter form. That's why I was asking you guys about mm-hmm. sort of your strategy there before. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a couple of days there you went on Reels or TikTok and like fan pages are picking it up, commentary pages. I just saw her on, I think, Angel Reese's podcast or somebody mm-hmm. else's podcast.
Yep.
She asked her about that. Like, oh, what's your type of guy? Like, oh, it's not Speedy. And like, it's like, it was like a whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
So that kind of content that, you know, it's high production value. It's episodic, like it's programmed, like Sneaker Shopping comes out every Monday at noon. So fans can expect it. It's also good for the advertising community because they can like sort of similar to like linear cable TV. They know it's coming. That's one part of the business. The other part of the business is e-commerce. So Complex, through all of its channels, has just over 100 million followers. And
let's get back to the yeah. first part of the business. That's part of the business. How do you monetize that? You monetize that through ads?
Yeah, there's traditional ads, and then the probably 40% is traditional ads, and then 60% is what I would call bespoke advertising. So integrations, like you have this, you know, water bottle on the table now, it could be Sprite. And then Sprite would present this episode, and there might be a Sprite, I don't know, hot take moment or whatever that kind of moment is. It's like an integration.
Yep.
And then a smaller subset of that is more in-depth creative development where, let's just say another Coke brand, say just Coke Zero, we might work with them on creating content that's totally new to the world that has our hosts in it, but like they sort of like co-create the IP with us.
So you're getting the sponsors before you green light the show, as opposed to green lighting the show and trying to pitch the show to sponsors?
We go both routes. So we are constantly launching shows with the intention of getting another, you know, Sneaker Shopping, another Speedy, and other hot ones, like shows that do tens of millions of views with every episode. But sometimes we're getting, you know, requests or briefs from, you know, whatever, Apple, Samsung, et cetera. They're like, hey, we have something so specific we want to achieve that it can't fit creatively within one of our shows. So we will work with our development team to build something totally new to world that fits their business goals. Those shows are obviously much harder to go viral and be organic, but they satiate, you know, the brand's needs to be like, you know, uber specific around, I don't know what, financial literacy or whatever they would want to be talking about.
So when you're creating a strategy to approach the brands, obviously you have mega brands now, but go back to the beginning stages, even from the source up until this point, what was your strategy when approaching a brand from a, I guess, from an ad standpoint, from, I guess, integration and into what you just spoke about?
So like the first part, I think what we were trying to communicate to advertisers around Complex and still do is this notion of convergence consumers. You know, youngish people that are just as interested in sort of traditional sports as they are action sports. You know, they're just as interested as in hip hop as they are reggaeton. They like streetwear as much as they admire couture, where most of the media before Complex was like, you like hip hop? It's The Source. You like menswear? It's GQ. You like action sports? It's Thrasher and Skateboarder. There wasn't like a cross pollination. And, you know, obviously Mark, you know, sort of growing up the way he was, like, you know, he loved everything. You know, he's making shirts for Tribe Called Quest, and he was skateboarding. He was, you know, doing graffiti, and he was into gaming, all these things. So it's like, let's pull all these things together and really, you know, what now is sort of very typical millennial culture and Gen Z culture, like they're consuming things from all different passion points. That wasn't so much the case then. So we were really educating them, hey, there's this new consumer who's interested in all of these things. And then we also had, you know, Complex was always about, you remember the magazines, it was like half entertainment and then half purchasing. It was a buyer's guide. Mm-hmm. So our argument was like, hey, we are reaching a consumer who is literally wallet in hand or credit card in hand. Like there's a direct connection to the lifestyle and to the products they purchased, thus making the ROI on marketing to them stronger for the brands.
Well, I mean, the vantage point you speak of is, it's pretty interesting, right? You start at The Source, you watch XXL, even Vibe. Those aren't here anymore.
Yeah.
Complex is still here. How does that, I mean, looking it back now, how did you learn from the lessons from, I guess, not the failures of them, but everything has its time span. How do you guys create the longevity after watching what happened to them?
Yeah, I think the one thing we're pretty obsessed about is winning the youth. Like we're constantly challenging ourselves to like not rest on the fact that like we've won the 25 to 35 year old audience, because pretty quick they're going to be 45. So if you're not winning 14 to 16 right now who admire the 21 and 22 year old, you're going to have a really hard time as a media brand. And I think you see that in other sectors too. Like I think you have to be obsessed with youth culture and what's next and reaching younger folks. Otherwise you're going to age out. And I think that perhaps is what happened to those, or maybe they're, you know, like also the print work, you know, they didn't adapt from print, where we pretty, you know, not perfectly, but we pretty aggressively adopted digital, then video, then social, you know, now AI, trying to figure out formats that we can deliver in an, you know, in an AI universe. What does that look like in the future? And if you're not aggressive about that stuff, it's, you're going to get left behind.
So you didn't get a chance to finish. What was the second and third leg of monetization for you guys?
So the second leg is e-commerce. So we are, like, if you go to Complex right now, there is a Shop Complex tab. Right now it's all drop specific. So we'll launch like a, you know, a New Balance collaboration, or, you know, Takashi Murakami artwork, whatever those kinds of things are. It's all like a limited time only launch. But next month it will become more of a omnipresent e-commerce marketplace, where there will be not just these limited time only drops. So the idea is that we basically leverage the scale, those 100 million plus consumers we're reaching every month, to not only super serve them on the content side, but serve them up the products and leverage our channels to serve up the products that they want to buy. So that, you know, sort of, you know, ads is one piece, e-commerce is the other piece. And then the third piece is experiences. ComplexCon is now twice a year, Vegas and Hong Kong. We're doing other experiences, so that within that becomes ticketing revenue and other merch revenue. Like, you know, the merch store around ComplexCon is a standalone, pretty successful business. And then we've got the store in LA where, you know, every weekend we're doing pop-up shops with different musicians and different athletes. It's not a huge business, but it's successful, and it's something that we can roll out to other markets as we grow.
Okay. So how vitally important is sponsorships to ComplexCon?
In terms of like the profitability or how?
Profitability, ability to actually throw the event.
Like, yeah.
Because you said, like, you know, you didn't want to rely too much on that from the content perspective, because, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah. It's super important. So if you didn't have the mix of sponsorship revenues, merch, like commerce revenues on site, and ticketing, it would be impossible to make it profitable. Like, doing it on ticketing alone or merch, you know, just the cost of production on this thing is in the tens of millions. You couldn't, it's not like, you know, Rolling Loud, great business, but it's like a couple stages. They're not, you know, it's not all these like super hyper developed experiences that cost, you know, millions of dollars to build. And, you know, without the sponsors, it would be, you know, impossible to make it a profitable business. And the same without the ticketing revenue or without the merch revenue. So it has to all come together. And that's sort of my point, is like, before, Complex was on one legged stool, just like ad revenue. And that's why it, you know, sold a couple times, right? And we really have a vision to making a three-legged stool with content, commerce, and experiences feeding into that three-legged stool, thus making it more stable. And, you know, Complex, I think 22-ish or 21 years old now, but like, we want to future-proof it for the next 50 years. So it's a strong, vibrant, thriving brand.
Is there any subscription model in there?
Not currently, but down the road, we want to build a business for like the super fans of Complex around access, like early access to e-commerce drops, special access to things like ComplexCon or activations we might do at Art Basel or F1. Also, you know, it could even be things like, hey, if you're part of this membership cohort, there's a special track of programming and special ticketing price for InvestFest or things like that we could do with partners. But it'll all be about, like we were talking about before, access. Like, this consumer thrives for access. Either like they want to experience the content to sort of get that like intellectual like ammunition, so they like, okay, yeah, I know what's up with that. Or they want to buy something, so it's like badging and it's like proof that you experience something. And then in the you know, in sort of the physical space, like they don't want to wait online, as we were talking about before. Like, you want to get
fast.
You want the guy at Disney that's walking you in front of the whole lines, right? And like, yeah, you know, and that also creates social ammunition for you. If you're like, oh, like I got in right away, I had this amazing thing, and I got the merch. Like, then you return to the, you know, work, and you're on the water cooler at school or whatever you're doing, and you have like the story that you can tell about it. You've got the physical badging, and you had a great experience. That's the win for consumers.
You brought up two great words, sponsors and partners. And to me, when I think sponsors, I think short-term relationship. Partners, I feel like there's longevity where they're going to be at ComplexCon or wherever event it is, 3, 5, 10 years.
Yeah.
How do you guys approach brands when you're thinking about that? Like, this company is up and coming. This might be a good sponsor, as opposed to that brand has been here. We need to partner with them to figure out how to build this.
I would say that I think we look at it along those lines, right? There's a group of brands and people that buy advertising that what they're doing is very tactical. You know, they're trying to promote TuneIn for their TV show or their streaming show this Friday, right? Like, those people, I would say, are like more in the sponsor arena, right? And then there's brands that, you know, have, you know, they share a similar consumer they're trying to target. They're trying to do interesting things in the space. I'm thinking like a Nike or Adidas, where, you know, you can take it a bit deeper and you can become real partners. And, you know, they're not coming and saying, hey guys, we need to do this thing in the next 90 days. Here it is, go execute for us. They're actually bringing us and saying like, hey, this is our product roadmap for the next 3 years. What do you think? Can you help us with consumer insights? Can you help us build out a plan to make, you know, Air Force One vibrant again, or whatever that case might be?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, you know, some brands will never be in the space that they share like a common kind of DNA as you. And I mean, obviously they're very different, but like brands that want, like I would say like Sprite back in the day was a brand that really wanted to participate in our space. So like that was a brand that made a lot of sense to be a partner with and be long-term with, where, you know, maybe like some of the water brands are just coming in and out of the market. It's that's not going to be a long-term partnership. Mm.
So, okay. So, Complex. It's an interesting timeline here. It starts in 2002. And then it sells in 2016 for $304
million? 328.
Yeah, $328 million in 2016. Then, in 2021, it sells for $294 million. BuzzFeed buys it. Then it sells for $109 million in 2024, NTW
Network.
Network. Yep. Okay. So from 320 to 294 to 109, what's happening here? It's selling drastically lower every couple of years.
Yeah. So when the first exit in 2016 was definitely top of the market in terms of media company valuations, you know, there was a ton of hype around like brands like Vice raising crazy amounts of money. And, you know, fortunately for us as, you know, shareholders in the business, we were able to exit, because I think if you exit later, it would have been really challenging. We were kind of the last media brand to exit in that era. The business was pretty strong and stable. But you could see when BuzzFeed bought it, it did buy it, you know, it was relatively similar revenues, but the multiples had compressed because the marketplace changed. And then when BuzzFeed owned it, I don't believe, I think their model of approaching audiences and approaching advertisers and monetization is just so dynamically different than Complex's approach. Like they are super mass, super transactional, where Complex is about like depth of connection, depth of conversation, creating real partnerships with brands. And it just didn't fit. So they didn't nurture it super well. They then SPAC'd. They got caught up in all that. That didn't go well and widely reported. You know, there was, I think they're on the NASDAQ. I'm not totally sure on that, but whatever exchange they're on, there was like the issues around potentially getting delisted and all of this stuff. And, you know, we were just super persistent about like, hey, if there's an opportunity and you're in a cash need environment, you know, we are interested in buying it and merging it with Network. And at first they weren't interested. And I think as their conditions didn't improve, it presented an opportunity and we bought the brand back in February. And
Who's Network?
Network, or what is it, or who?
Both.
Network is a live streaming e-commerce platform where the world's best creators and brands come to sell their most highly coveted products in a live stream e-commerce environment. It was started by Jimmy Iovine and a couple other folks that were sort of associated with Complex. I joined there, I think, late 2018, early 2019, something like that. We built it up, pretty successful business. Live stream shopping didn't scale quite as quickly as we thought it would. Like we were looking to like how amazing it's doing in China and Brazil, and we thought like, hey, like this is gonna be like, you know, the echo boom in North America. And, you know, sort of as we were looking to like, okay, how do we make this business stronger? You know, we're looking at things like our CAC, and we're spending, you know, multi-million dollars a year on Meta to drive downloads and drive engagement. And, you know, all of us were kind of like ex-Complex people. So we're trying to super serve that same audience, but just through a commerce perspective. And when this opportunity, it just totally made sense. It's like, hey, the audience is there. The brand strength is there. We can transition from Network to Shop Complex. It's a much stronger name. It's a bigger name, more reputable. The audience is there, so we don't have to invest as much into like all the digital ads on Meta. And, you know, we thought we could make a much stronger business, solve for the issues on the complex side and then solve for the issues on the network side.
And Mark Gecko was a part of the network?
He was not originally, no. But Mark is on the board of the new company, yeah.
So you guys, you exited in 16?
Yeah.
Stayed on, 18, you joined there. When you guys, when the team is trying to, and team building, and maybe we'll get into that a little bit, but is vitally important to this. But as you're watching it, it's almost something that you helped create and you're starting to watch it devalue, devalue, devalue. How long or how long were the discussions to say, we need to go back and try to acquire this thing?
Well, you left. You left for a point in time, right?
From Complex?
Yeah.
18. Yeah. So, yeah, I left in 18. Yeah, I left at the top of 18. I think I joined Network in the top of 19. I might have the dates off a little bit there. But it was definitely early days for Network. But, you know, like, we were on fire, especially during COVID, e-commerce. Like, we were, like, we thought we could do no wrong. We were, you know, raising money. Like, things were good. And then, you know, as everyone sort of got out of COVID, things started to turn back to normal from an e-commerce perspective, from an experience perspective. So, you know, we faced some of those headwinds and we were navigating them. And, you know, just quite frankly, we always had an admiration for Complex. Like, you know, we built the brand, we love the brand, we admire it, you know, we love the audience. And we felt like, you know, it's so hard building a new consumer brand. If we could just merge the sort of innovation, the technology, the e-commerce, the spirit of entrepreneurialism with Complex that had the audience and the cachet and the credibility, we could make, you know, a media company of the future, a marketplace, an e-commerce business of the future that looked like no other. So that was really the aspiration. And to answer your other question, I think it took about a year-ish to convince them to do it, meaning BuzzFeed to sell it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very rare that you exit a business and get the business back and at a lower valuation. So,
well, there's a lot of examples of that. Like Dan Gilbert sold Quicken Loans.
Okay.
He bought it back. You know, made it multi-billion-dollar business. Alan Shapiro, I think, bought and sold Dick Clark Productions like 3 times, and each time he sold it for $1 billion and then bought it back for like $100 million or something. I mean, those numbers might not be exactly right, but okay. Like, you know, his thing was like, I know how to run that business. Okay. I'm going to sell it to these guys. They don't know how to run it.
So
they're going to mess it up. I'm going to come back and
so buy, sell high, buy low. You was that. Yeah, you guys sold it for $324 million and then brought it back for $100 million.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was intentional, but it worked out that way. Yeah, yeah.
It worked out, right? Yeah. So, but that's some level of foresight, right? Like, was there any foresight or that was just a coincidence? You kind of knew that they was going to ruin it? And
so, all right, we just well, buy it back. I would say that, you know, you all would know this better than me, but there's always a stat out there about like, mergers and acquisitions fail the majority of time, right? So, you know, selling Complex to the first to like a Verizon and a Hearst, I mean, we were independent. So it was like, okay, like we're operating separately, but still things got a little weirdish. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, BuzzFeed just think about it on paper. Does that make any sense? There's no intersectionality of those audiences. Like they're not even interested in the same thing. Like BuzzFeed's making videos about like exploding watermelons by putting rubber bands around them and cats on roller skates, and like Complex is talking about like nuances within streetwear and hip-hop and art culture. It's just like, I don't know, it just didn't make a lot of sense.
How about retention of talent? 2016, you have Everyday Struggle.
Yeah.
Joe Budden, obviously now one of the leaders in media. You have Academics, another guy who's leading in media. The lessons that's learned from them not being part of Complex anymore, but having a guy like Speedy, who has been super creative and great for the brand. Joe with yeah, sneaker shopping, obviously Hot Ones. The lessons that's learned from losing talent, but retaining talent that is going to be helpful for the brand.
Yeah, you know, an everyday focus. You know, I wish I could say it's super easy. You know, Complex is, I think, super, I would say we're really happy that we've been able to like incubate a lot of talent and give people, you know, a lot of younger people like a Speedy coming up, like their initial platform, or Emily Oberg, who now has like a super successful fashion brand. She was like one of the first, you know, anchors on Complex News. And sometimes those people are so entrepreneurial, you know, they're so motivated, you're never going to keep them. And then some people are like Complex family, like Joe and Speedy, who like, they really value being associated with Complex. They want to be in the mix. They want to build new shows. Like we just built a new show with Joe called On Display, where he goes into celebrities' homes and he basically interviews them about like their collections and sort of like their obsessions. So like he went to Dave Bautista's house and he collects lunch boxes and bicycles. And like the big insight was like, Dave's like, I couldn't afford any of this. Can I swear or no?
Of course.
He's like, I can't afford any of this shit when I was a kid. So now I'm buying it now. And he's like, you know, it's like, and it kind of dawned on me. It was like, wow, it's like, you know, sort of all about this fandom culture. But then I was like, what a like kind of a powerful message, right? Like that, like once he obtained prosperity, he could unlock all these things that he couldn't get as a kid. And I thought like, you know, anyway, kind of uplifting sort of subtext there. But you got to give my little bit of a pivot here, but you have to give the talent new opportunities, right? You have to invest into them. You have to say like, you know, hey Joe, like you've got Sneaker Shopping, bona fide hit. You've got the Sneaker Podcast hit. What else are you interested in? Oh, I'm interested in collectibles and sort of like Architectural Digest type content. Okay, let's build something around that. And you have to give them the opportunity to be creative and flourish. You know, otherwise they're going to go do their own things. And sometimes they're, you know, with like, you know, other people that you mentioned before, they're so entrepreneurial that like, that's just a force. You're never going to be able to like, you know, keep it inside the building. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. Like that, you know, arguably they have the number one podcast in the world. Amazing. Or, you know, in the space, and that's great. Yeah. So I think, and then, you know, the other part is like, we always should be an incubation engine for new talent. And that gets back to my point about like really being obsessed with winning the younger audience. Because oftentimes these creators, they find their audience and then they super serve them. Like the Sneaker Shopping audience is a very specific male consumer and they're super serving them. But you need to bring in other talent to super serve other parts of the audience as well.
So, okay. How important is the content creation side of what you guys do as far as Instagram, TikTok? It's a very nuanced skill set and it changes a lot. Like, so at one point in time, you know, Reels was everything and then Instagram changed it to carousels. And you need to have to stay up to date with this, with these things. And you guys do a good job as far as staying in the algorithm. So how important is that to make sure that your content team is up to date and well prepared to tackle the new challenges of social media every day?
It's everything. If we're not engaging and growing audiences, the rest of the business will suffer, right? If we're not growing and engaging audiences, we can't put things on the e-commerce side in front of that audience. If we're not engaging audiences, the advertising business will suffer. If we're not engaging audiences, ticket sales will be soft at ComplexCon. So the most important thing we do, and, you know, led by Aria and Noah, like they just do a super good focused job on continuing to press to grow the socials and having dedicated talent. Because, you know, a lot of people think like, okay, I'll just have my YouTube shorts person do TikToks and they'll do Reels. Well, they're completely different approaches, right? Like Reels is feed based still, algorithmic as well. TikTok is 100% algorithmic. I can't really figure out shorts yet, but like someone will figure that out. But like you need dedicated people that are experts on that. And they just tend to be like younger folks, right? Like you have to invest in younger people who really understand those platforms, who understand Snap or whatever it is, and then tailor the content in appropriate way to reach those audiences.
How many people do you have on your content team?
I don't know exactly, but over 100 with freelancers. Yeah.
When staying fresh and staying youthful, you spoke about AI earlier. Talk about how you the ideas and the team around that. I know you had the Slim Shady M&M cover.
Yeah.
Incorporating that. So how are you guys looking to implement that? I would say it's the wave of the future, but it's of the now.
Yeah. So that was a good example. That was our first piece of it. And for the listeners that don't know, pretty smart idea by Noah and team. They programmed or fed a large language model all of like the Slim Shady lyrics and references over time to train it up on what that personality would look or act like. And then they had Slim Shady interview Marshall Mathers, and obviously it played into the whole theme of the album. And then visually we brought that to life, and them in like a Thelma and Louise moment on the cover, you know, sort of like driving off a cliff kind of thing. But like, you know, at least as far as I know, that was the first time ever sort of the entry personality of an artist interviewed them in an AI format. So like, you know, pretty I think, you know, pretty good use of the technology, pretty innovative, definitely not cheap. But, you know, other things we're looking at is like, okay, so as Perplexity starts to disrupt Google, right, and it's sort of AI search, how do we create formats that show up in that area? We're looking at a lot of things like how do we take things that are super successful in the text format, like oftentimes like our rankings and lists of, you know, whatever top 50 sneakers or hip hop albums, they create a tremendous amount of virality and debate. It's very easy for AI to just steal that content and not give us any attribution. So we're thinking about like, okay, how do we turn that into vertical video? How do we turn that into long form video? Because we think there's more of a moat with video than there is, you know, than there is with text, certainly. So it's, I wouldn't say we have it solved. I think it's super complicated. You know, the AI tools are going to continue to progress and make probably business more challenging for content publishers, and definitely not less. So, you know, it's like, you know, you can't bet against youth culture and you can't bet against technology, right? Those things will always win. So you better lean into them or you're fucked.
How important is data collection to you guys' business?
On the e-commerce side, super important, you know, because that, you know, you're doing the drip campaigns and, you know, recidivism campaigns and, you know, all kinds of things to get consumers back into the store. It'll be super important when we launch membership, obviously. On the advertising side, it depends on the brand. Like some people are super interested in that, like who they're reaching, how they're reaching them. And then others are like they're pretty familiar with Complex and they're like, okay, yeah, got it. 18 to 34, multicultural. You know, that's what you're super serving.
One of the things that you're passionate about, we talked about culture, we talked about music, is art. And I know everything Complex encompasses all of it, but on a personal side, you're an art collector.
Ish, yeah. Ish. I mean,
did the passion come from the work, or was that something that you already had passion for?
Yeah, I think like, you know, I was thinking about it on the ride up here, like when I was a kid in Tennessee, we lived on like a commune. So I like had like very like hippie parents, like commune, like, you know, communists in a true form, right? So in one way, it made me really like appreciate art and individuality. And there was a lot of musicians in that space. And it just gave me an appreciation of that. But it also gave me like a staunch appreciation for capitalism, right? So I like ran away from it, but still kept those things. So I think part of that, like, you know, we'd like share houses with musicians and all these things and artists. So like my home space always reflects that. And I like to support the art community. You know, I'm part of a group at the Prez Art Museum that helps, you know, sort of new artists get exposure in the museum, and we fund that. And it's more of, you know, kind of, I don't know. It's an interesting space for me. It's a space I admire artists because I'm not one. So it kind of gives me like an entryway into like their thinking and their creativity. And I think that kind of like difference, almost like healthy tension, makes me better in business because I'm able to like sort of see things from their perspective and then apply it if I'm working with a brand or working internally. And, you know, to your point, Complex has always been, you know, had an admiration for art, you know, whether it's like Cause doing covers or us doing, you know, work with Murakami. You know, there are a number of artists that really break through from a consumer perspective, both on the music side and the traditional, you know, sort of fine art side. And working with those folks makes for a much more interesting media product, consumer product, and then, you know, if there's like a physical product that comes out of it.
Yeah, is that how some of the verticals are built, especially from the digital side? I remember it was just Complex, and we had Complex Sneakers, then we had Complex Sports.
Yeah.
Is there like, all right, we have a group, there's a huge interest here, maybe we need Complex Tech or we need Complex Food?
Yeah, so they probably were a little scattered under the BuzzFeed regime, so we have retrenched it. So the categories are music, style, sport, pop culture, which kind of catch movie, gaming, and food. So those are kind of the main verticals that we're focused on, and really leaning deep into those. And to your point, there's very specific dedicated teams that work on each one of those verticals. So there's like a head of sneakers, a head of style, a head of music, and they have teams under them that are both producing content and working the socials to engage the audience.
So what's the future for Complex? Like what do you guys have envisioned for the 10-year model?
10-year model in terms of, so I would say we really want to continue to invigorate the brand with, you know, super interesting content like that M&M piece that we just talked through. We want to, over the next few months, as you're watching or reading, you know, pieces of content like the M&M, you're also able to shop it. You're also able to go to an experience tied to it. So we want to have that sort of like trifecta of content, commerce, and experience come to life around everything. We want to build, or we believe we can build, a really big e-commerce marketplace business. You know, this was the first year we took ComplexCon to Asia and Hong Kong. That was super successful. So we want to continue to bring ComplexCon to other markets. You know, we really just want to build a super strong, dynamic business that is not sort of dependent on one source of revenue, that can flourish for the next, you know, 50 or 75 years. I don't want it to sort of have the bumps and stumbles that it's had over the last 5 years. So I think it's all about making, you know, a super healthy, profitable, current and sort of future looking business.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the expansion of ComplexCon, and especially going to Asia. What was that experience like? Because you hear about, obviously, culture being exported, and sometimes it feels like, you know, they appreciate it more because it's not specifically there. Were the expectations the same in terms of success for the event when you took it international?
You know, consumer, we didn't expect the same from like a consumer turnout perspective, but it was pretty good. I think it was 30 or 35,000 people bought tickets and attended over the 2 days, which was pretty good. It was a bit of a lower investment than we would make in the US. It was kind of very much a pilot, but it beat our expectations, both in terms of attendance and the revenues it produced. So we're full steam ahead on doing it again. We've got a great partner in China, and she wants to bring it to other markets like Singapore. It's pretty interesting. It's like she did it in Hong Kong, but like the majority of the people came from mainland China because of the access, right? Like ComplexCon was giving them access sort of like in real life with the artists and the creators, like sort of that community, but then to the products, where, you know, people in Japan have access to that stuff so easily, right? So it's kind of you're finding this need case for it, whether it be in Hong Kong or Singapore, and popping up in those places. And I would say similar, like we're looking to do one in Dubai, we want to do Paris or maybe London. So I think it'll, you know, there will be a time where there will be, you know, ComplexCon is almost this like traveling circus model, and it's popping up in these different places and doing really unique experiences and merch drops and live content and all that coming together.
What's your thoughts on the creator economy? A lot of people are saying that it's like a recession for creators, and a lot, you have few people at the top that's doing well, and the vast majority of people that's making viral content never make any money.
Yeah.
So is it sustainable? Like, where do we go from here as far as what has been coined as the creator economy.
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people flooded the zone, right? So there's a dearth of creators out there. I think, you know, the people that are doing super well, they've found a niche in a positive way, and they're super serving that consumer and they're adding value. I think those people, you know, long term will flourish. They just have to figure out how to monetize. I don't think the platforms, at least in the current state, are going to be that path. Like, that's just to get you the exposure so that brands like, you know, Samsung or whoever want to work with you. And then I think, you know, they just need people that can help them get brand deals and like explain to Samsung or, you know, Meta or Ray-Ban, whoever it is, like, hey, this is why she or he is super important. This is their audience and this is how you can activate them. Clearly at the top, to your point, you know, like the Mr. Beasts of the world, Logan and Jake Paul, like, you know, they're, you know, even Shannon Sharp, I think he's, on well on his way to really dominate in this new sort of like content paradigm. Those people can branch out and do all other things, you know, launch CPG brands, launch candy bar brands, become professional fighters. Like, they really figured it out. The middle, I think, is the hardest part, right? Like, it's like you're not niche enough and specific enough to be seen as like really core and expert to whatever that community is. And I think there's a lot of people in that segment of like, you know, the boyfriend girlfriend videos. It's like I don't know who wants to sponsor that. I can't figure out like what's the value proposition. Like,
how do you monetize that? Like, do you feel like it's too much content? Because I was just thinking about like even, you know, previously you had sports and you had news and then you had like movies and stuff. Right now you have sports, you have news, you have movies, but you have 24-hour content that's being produced on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. It's an unprecedented time in human history, if you really think about it, right?
Where very democratic.
It's like a hurricane of content daily, right? Is this oversaturating the media market to where it's devaluing real, actual, valuable content? Doesn't even mean anything anymore?
You could make that argument. I wouldn't make that argument because I think when you make really high quality content, it breaks through. Like, we were talking about Speedy interviewing Gorilla last week. It broke through, right? Like, he designed that episode brilliantly, creatively, to have those moments where people didn't know were like, they flirting? Was he like embarrassed? Was he cracking up? Could he not understand her? Like, he designed that whole thing to be a thing, right? And it broke through. And like, people that do that, I think, will be successful. Is there a barrage of like just nonsense and your friends posting 1800 stories that you don't need to look at? Sure. But the high quality content, I think, will break through. I really like all these platforms, I think, are for the betterment, right? It's giving more people access.
All of them are for the betterment.
I think so. It's giving people more access. I mean,
is
like
a good thing, though?
I mean, there's obviously not nice people out there.
Let's just be honest, right? The vast majority of content, it's like the vast majority of music. The vast majority of music is bad, and it's detrimental, and that's why specifically hip hop music is going down, right? Because previously, like the golden era, you had to really be talented in order to be heard. Now anybody can be heard. Now with that breaking of the barrier, you lose any level of nostalgic moments. Quality of music is going down and it's hurt the entire genre.
Yeah, I can see the point you're making. I think the point I'm making is like, you have in content, you have these seismic consumer changes happening where, like, you know, the average age of like news programming on linear television is in its 70s, right? That means there's someone like 104 watching it if the average is 70, right?
So, like, would I watch it? The average is 70?
Average is 70. MSNBC is 70 years old, right? That means there's no one 18 watching it, literally no one, not one person, right? And all of these social tools, and I would agree, some of it is not nice and some of it is not good and some of it is low quality, but there are a lot of people that wouldn't get the opportunity to create content and break through with there's such a reduction in friction that they can have the opportunity to break through. And I do concur with your point that it is important that it is high quality, it's premium, it's scheduled, that it's done in a methodical way. I do think that's more valuable. It's more trustworthy. I think brands matter. Like, you know, I don't agree in this, like, you know, Jason Calacanis and Chamath Palihapitiya that like citizen journalism is like gonna be the thing. Like, no, you guys are just all riding Elon's, you know, like wave, right? Like, it's not true. Like, citizen journalism, yeah, maybe it's part of it, but like, I want journalists I can trust, right? I want people with ethics.
Can you trust any journalists?
Can you trust anyone? But I
yeah, you know, like, but that brings up a point.
I think honestly, there are journalists, and the journalists I've worked with, that they have boundaries. Like, you know, they will quit at a principle. They will not do things at a principle. I think there are people that like that. There's certainly people that the other way, right? That they will trade you access to a famous musician to give them a favorable whatever, right? Because they want that access. But then there's journalists that are hypercritical, right? And you know, they won't bend those things. So I think, you know, I do think the critical journalists are super important. You know, I don't want to just see, like, you know, flattery of people. Like, you know, the podcast, I think it's called like Founders or Acquired, one of them, and they like bring business people on. But there's no critique. It's just like they're just lathering them with how great they are. It's like, well, that's not journalism. That's just, you know, it's just a hype piece. It's just a biopic in an audio format.
So, and that theme, how do you stay youthful when it comes to content creation, right? You have Speedy, but at a certain point, and Speedy's great. It's going to be a demographic.
The younger one, yeah.
Right? So like,
but even Speedy pushes us.
He does. I think he's amazing.
Yeah, but Speedy is critical of us around like.
Who's the next?
Yeah, or hey guys, how come you're crushing it on Reels, but TikTok's not doing as well? You got to go get in there and tinker with it. And then he'll be like, hey, you're killing it in TikTok, but why are you killing it in Shorts? Like, he's honest about that. And I would say all the people that are, you know, sort of on the content side, they tend to be of that, you know, mid to late 20s cohort. They're very aware of that. Yeah. And they are pushing that agenda. Like, they're, you know. You know, sometimes it's, you know, makes us maybe be a little squirmish, you know, but like they are pushing that. And I think it's right. You have to be obsessed with the youth or you're going
to
lose it.
Does it get to a point where it's, you're seeing talent that, and they're like, wait, that's the person. Can we build around that person?
Sure. Like, are you guys familiar with, she's new, Jillian, she's a new on air anchor for us on Complex News. She's pretty new, like in the last couple of months, but you know, discovered her totally organically. She was a producer behind the camera. Cornell, who used to be our head of video, he now works with Kendrick at PG Lang. He's like the president of PG Lang. Mm-hmm. And he hit us up, hey, we're doing the pop out. We're doing this music video in Compton. She happened to be home in Compton, got her friend to hold the camera, right? They'd never been on camera before. Does this content, it does like, first day 10 million views, second day 20 million views, whatever, right? She did like a ton of content and we were like, oh wow, you're a star. Like we need to get you in front of the camera instead of back of the camera, and we need to, you know, help you hone and sharpen your skills. But we're constantly, you know, Ari and Noah are constantly looking to find and develop new creators and on, you know, on screen and talent. And like, you know, like Utel, who's another one of our on screen talent, like Cornell got him out of like Flight Club. He went into Flight Club and the kid was like just pitching him hard on like whatever the shoes were. And he's like, huh, do you want to do like a screen test? And then like, you know, he's been with us for the last, you know, 3-4 years now.
Well, there you have it. Appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, nice meeting you guys. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Sure. It's a pleasure. Sure. Yeah, can we end with some lists? You love albums. You love sneakers.
Well, I don't
know. Illmatic was your favorite album.
Yeah, that's my favorite album. Well, yeah, that and like Component Noriega's first album was probably
War
like,
Report.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite of all time.
I haven't got my hands on it.
Back in college, I had like a tape deck, you know, in the car.
Yeah.
And it got stuck. And you know how, like, it plays so many times, it waters down.
What's your favorite song on the album?
I don't know. There's so many. But I always remember, you know, Left Rack is Iraq. That's, like, my favorite piece of it. I don't know. That album was, like, so,
What's your favorite joint on there?
I think it got 5 mics in the source.
It got 4.5.
They revised it and went back and gave it.
It should have got 5, though.
Yeah, that was a big debate.
They got 4.5. My favorite song is Closer. But
it's which version?
The original version.
Serious?
For sure. I don't care for the second version.
That's the best one.
No, it wasn't.
Sticky was my favorite one. Pause.
The original. And then LA is a good one too. That's a really good one. The extended version.
Yeah, I think people would say the remix or the
Toronto Pop. LA is on the album.
Yeah, but they switched the beat on some of the albums.
Well, there's only one album.
No. I'll play it for you.
Yeah, they did it a second version
of the album. Blood Money.
T-O-N-Y.
Remember that was a commercial song, but I'm saying Blood Money for sure.
Yeah, that was a good song. The whole album, honestly.
It's underrated.
It was a rare album that every song was, like, listenable, a good song.
I still listen to that. Like, when I work out, I still listen to
great
album. It has good replay value.
It's interesting, though. It does sound like, at this point, it doesn't sound modern. I felt for like a long time I'd listen to it and I would never think like, oh, that sounds like it's from a different era, but now I listen to it, I'm like, oh, wow, that's I mean, what is that, 25 years ago?
96
or 98, something like that.
What I'm talking about is the Molly Mall remix. The original has the West Coast beat and then Molly Mall did a remix. So it's two different versions
on the album.
Yeah.
There's only one. They
had the Molly Mar remix, but there was originally just the LA.
Just look at Spotify. End the debate.
Yeah, no debate. There's two versions.
I don't remember, but
I'll play it.
Okay.
I just remember the cassette getting down to like the sounded like it was underwater. You know, like
I let my tape rot till my tape pop.
You know, or just, you know, my little Honda CRV. I couldn't, you know, afford to get a new whatever it was, Pioneer.
Yeah, and then Prodigy, little known fact about that album, he was supposed to be on LA as a verse. He's on as a hook,
mm-hmm.
But he gave his verse to Nas for the It Was Written album.
I'm taking another song.
Live Nigga Rap.
I feel like you guys could do another podcast
on hip hop.
Yeah.
Oh, 1,000%.
Why you do it?
I feel like that the expectation is like, of course they can do that. Like, it's like we could do one on sports. Of course they can do that. What we do, nobody can do.
Yeah, but look, you've built the brand. Why not create sort of, you know, you've got fans on the left and the right of the brand, create products for them. It's, you know, like, I would imagine there's a very specific brand and advertising group that wants to work with you guys, right? Like, around financial literacy, et cetera. Yeah. Sports is everybody else. Music is everybody else. I mean, the two biggest passion points in the world are music and sports, mm-hmm. right? So, like, just, you know, if you guys love money.
For the love of money.
Maybe I'll call my friends over at Complex. You know,
just an idea, you know?
for sure.
But yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was fun.
We appreciate
congrats
you being
here. On all your success.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
At the UPS store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time. And still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open. And happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable.